This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. The internet has given us access to an extraordinary amount of information, but the internet is also giving people easier access to personal information about us, from our consumer profiles to our social security numbers. This month, the Federal Trade Commission held hearings about online privacy to determine whether the government should institute privacy safeguards. My guest, Beth Givens, directs the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, which both collects information from people reporting privacy abuses and educates people on how to protect their privacy. The group is a project of the Utility Consumers Action Network, a San Diego-based nonprofit which advocates for consumer interests in the areas of telecommunications, energy, insurance, and the internet. I asked Givens about the most common problems they're hearing about on the privacy hotline.
We get a number of calls from people who say, I'm applying for work, I've had a good, successful career to date, I might get to the first interview or to the second, and then I'm just dropped, and I have no idea why I'm being dropped, and I'm wondering, is there some information out there that might be harming me? And if so, where could it be, and how can I find out what's out there? Another common theme is that of lack of control, which I think relates to the first theme, and that is people want to be able to control what's done with their personal information, but they really don't have the mechanisms to do that. We just aren't set up that way for the most part in this country.
You've also been tracking something that's called identity theft. What is
right.
that?
Well, identity theft is something we started noticing just a couple years into our project, and we started in 1992. We would get calls from people who'll say, my wallet has been stolen or I've been mugged. Or for whatever reason, somebody has gotten my social security number, my credit card numbers, they've opened up new credit accounts in my name, they're impersonating me, and all of a sudden I find that my credit history has been ruined and I can't get a job or I can't get a loan, and I don't know how to stop this.
How do you stop it?
It takes some time, and unfortunately, the burden is entirely on the victim's shoulders. What you do first off is you contact the three credit reporting bureaus because they're the clearinghouse of all of that information about you, and they will put a fraud flag on your credit history. It's not entirely 100% effective, but when the imposter or imposters tries to open up a new credit account, of course, the creditor will contact the credit bureau, and if the flag pops up, they will demand some more information from the imposter. And hopefully at that time, it will be stopped. Unfortunately, it doesn't work 100% of the time, and for many times, the imposter, over a period of years, can go on impersonating you, spending your money, and giving you the headache of a bad credit report and the headache of having to clean it up.
There are database companies that collect and then sell information about Americans, financial information, health information, consumer information. What are some of the new ways that they have of getting information about us?
Well, I think the newest way, of course, would be from your interaction on the web, and that's not to the point where individually identifiable information is necessarily collected every time you're on. But some of, not necessarily new ways, but more robust ways. For example, more and more records from government agencies are being sold, public records from government agencies are being sold to these information vendors. They're making them available in their database systems and making it very easy to go from record to record, database to database, and compile what's basically an electronic dossier on you. That's not necessarily new, but I think the power of the computer and telecommunications technologies to pull together all that information is a new aspect of this whole scene.
Local governments have always had a lot of information about its residents, birth and death certificates, tax information, how much money you purchased a home for. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that information is now winding up in these big databases. Are local governments actually selling information about us to profit groups?
Well, yes, actually, the sale of this information is a growing revenue stream for city and county governments. And interestingly enough, at the federal level, we do have some protection against this. It's called the Federal Privacy Act of 1974. And at the state level, about half of the states have the equivalent of the Privacy Act, which puts some limits on the sale and allows you access to those records so you know what's in there about you. But very, very few states, I think it's only four, have the equivalent of the Privacy Act going down to the local level. And of course, the local level is where the treasure trove of personally identifiable information is about you. You mentioned property assessment. There's voter registration. There is a number of databases available at the local level, which are quite revealing.
Is there a call now to regulate in some way the databases and how they gather information and also who they can sell it to?
Well, what has happened recently is a 4-day set of workshops held by the Federal Trade Commission in Washington, D.C., and they pulled in the major players. Day one dealt specifically with databases and reference services. What has transpired is that the 8 largest companies that market and sell these databases have come together and come up with a policy which they have agreed to abide by. And so they are promoting a self-regulatory approach. The Federal Trade Commission is also more or less in favor of a self-regulatory approach and has given these companies about a year to show that they can adequately self-regulate. And the 8 companies have been joined since by several other large information companies, and they have then all agreed to abide by this set of self-regulatory principles. I've looked at those principles, and I must say they don't answer some of the concerns that I have. For example, let's say you are a job applicant and information has been obtained from various databases about you. The principles don't get down to saying that the actual copy of that information that's been pulled should actually be revealed to the job applicant. Now, there are some who would say that there are laws today which would require that to happen, but I see absolutely no movement by employers and the database services to actually make that information available to the applicants. So I think that the principles that these companies have developed jointly are a good first step, but they really don't go all the way to dealing with some of the really serious problems that can transpire with these databases, which is mainly what happens if there's erroneous information in there, or what happens if they're pulling up the wrong Jane Smith.
What are some of the principles that the big databases have agreed to?
Well, they have agreed to limit access to what they call the non-public information, and that would be information that would be, say, from sources other than public records. They have agreed to limit those to people who have a legitimate need, for example, private investigators, law enforcement, insurance investigators, and so on. Another principle would be to gather information only from legitimate sources, and that would be from public records and from commercial sources where you've had some transactions with, for example, your credit card company or the credit reporting bureau. And they'd also, they have a policy of openness, which means if you inquire of the database company what information about you is there, they would then tell you the nature, and they would tell you the nature of that data. But when pressed by the Federal Trade Commission, they did not come right out and say that they would actually provide you with an actual copy of the data that they have on you, and I think that's another shortcoming of their policy.
Have you tried to get information about yourself through any of the large database companies or through any of the websites now that sell information, just to see what the what's there and how it works?
Yeah, I have. It's actually become kind of an obsession. Yeah, a couple of years ago, I contacted the major data compilers for the marketing industry, and I based it on a funny personal thing that happened to me. I had ordered some materials from, I guess you might call it Paranoid Fringe Press, on privacy. And since it was early in my job as being project director, I wasn't as careful about privacy as I am today, but I wrote a personal check and sent it to them and ordered these books from a company that sells things like how to make, you know, nitrogen fertilizer bombs and how to hide from the police and how to change your identity and things like that. And I soon found myself getting all kinds of other mailings from similar types of companies, you know, how to buy knives and guns and some really rather amazingly scary stuff. And I kind of jokingly said, I wonder how long it's going to be before the FBI comes knocking on my door, because I have kind of a profile now of being a neo-Nazi or a survivalist.
Right.
And so I just out of curiosity, I said, I want to track down my profile. And so I contacted the major data compilers and said I would, and I told them exactly what I was doing and who I was. I didn't try to hide my identity or anything. And I said, I really would like to know what information you have on me so that I can determine what kind of profile I have as a consumer. And I could not get a single one to release to me the information that they have about me. They just simply aren't set up for it in their infrastructure. They just haven't been set up. You know, they just haven't developed their systems to the point where they can divulge all this information, pull it together and print it out and give it to people, which I think is a real shame. You know, it's one of the key principles of privacy advocacy or privacy protection is that you have the ability, first off, to know that there is information gathered about you, and that would be called openness. And then you have the ability to access it. And then further, you have the ability to make corrections or amend it if there are errors. And then another one is to know who has accessed that information about you. These are called the fair information principles, and they are embodied in our credit reports, for example. That's why we have access to our credit report because of a federal law. We have a right of correction. We have a right to know who has tracked that credit report. We have a right to have that credit report given to people with a legitimate need to know. But unfortunately, in the major data compilers on the marketing side of things, and then also the major database companies on the public records side of things, that notion of access and disclosure and correction has not been built into their systems.
So what else have you done to try to see what information you could get about yourself online from other people's data banks?
Well, I've done, I think, what just about everyone on the internet does when they find out about these things. I've gone to all the people locator services, and there are a number of them. These are free, by the way, and they're based on white pages of the phone book for the most part. And I've looked up myself in various of these databases. For example, Switchboard is one. Who, Where is another one. 411 is another one. Just to see if my telephone number is in there, if my address is in there, and if the safeguards that I have placed on myself in the white pages have been followed. I don't have my address in the white pages. I just have my name and initial and my phone number, and indeed, that's what I have found. I've also plunked down some money and actually gone into one of the vendors of public records information just to see if I could pull out my own Social Security number. And I did successfully pull it out. It took me about 10 minutes, and I didn't have to put in a great deal of information, just my name, you know, the where I live. And I waited while the computer churned a while, and there it was, along with my month and year of birth, not the exact date, my address. And had I moved around in past years, you would have seen my previous addresses, and you also might see my employer and previous employers. But in my situation, that did not come out. And that's really about all I've done. I'm not willing to spend the amount of money. It could mount up to $100 or $200 to see what I might find in some of these other fee-based systems.
Well, this is actually pretty disturbing because you don't want the public to have your address. You've left it out of the phone directory, mm-hmm. and you were able to get it online through this service.
Absolutely.
You mm-hmm. don't want people to have your Social Security number because they could use that to access all kinds of information about you or to impersonate you.
Mm-hmm.
So how much of a problem is this, do you think?
Well, there have been some studies done recently to try to determine how much of a problem this is, and they unfortunately haven't, well, unfortunately, maybe I should say fortunately, haven't been able to prove that these databases are the source of information for identity theft and other problems. But the reason they haven't been able to prove it is because it's a totally invisible process. There is no audit trail. I mean, when I did a search on myself on this one database, I suspect that there really wasn't an audit trail kept, that if I needed to go back and find out who accessed that information, who was stalking me, how did they get it, I wouldn't be able to retrieve that. So it's an invisible process, and I think the fact that these studies came up with Zippo in terms of linking cause and effect doesn't really mean that it's not there. I think it just means that we have an invisible system here.
Now, the databases in which you were able to get your home address, your Social Security number, do you consider these legitimate bases?
Actually, yes. In fact, the one that I used has since joined with these companies that have signed on to the privacy principles. And interestingly enough, about a week after I was able to pull out my own Social Security number, that particular company, because of pressure from some of these other companies, decided to turn off that particular service. So I can no longer go back to that particular service and get my Social Security number. However, I can to others, companies that haven't joined in this effort to impose self-regulatory regulations on them.
My guest is Beth Givens. She directs the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Beth Givens, the director of the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse. Now, I have a question. I want some advice on a related subject.
All right.
I use my credit cards a fair amount, and I often use them on the telephone, whether it's to order movie tickets or something from a mail order catalog, theater tickets. And, you know, I do always wonder, what are people doing with number? I mean, can't they just use the number to order something in my name afterwards if they were so inclined, if there was somebody who was unethical working at the other end of the phone? How much do you worry about that? How much should we worry about that?
Well, we're all at the mercy of the honesty or lack of honesty of those that we give those numbers to. You know, I think you can feel okay if you're going to a company which you've dealt with a lot. For example, one of the major catalog mail order companies that you have an existing relationship. I would be real careful. First off, if you've been approached, say you get a telephone call saying, "I've got this great deal for you. All you need to do is sign up and give me your MasterCard number, and you'll get such and such a wonderful offer." I would be very, very skeptical about when you've been solicited. However, when you're calling and you know that you've had a good, long relationship with that entity, then I wouldn't worry so much. The other thing that you need to do is kind of your own housekeeping. When you throw out those credit transaction slips, toss them out, be sure that you rip them into a lot of little pieces, because dumpster diving is kind of a popular way for the fraudsters to get information to use to impersonate people. And I had an experience, kind of a funny experience about that. I was asked by a local consumer reporter to give her permission to do a search on me. And she said, "I'm not going to tell you how we're going to do it, but we're going to be doing a story on how easy it is to find information about people, and we want you to be a subject." So I probably kind of foolishly, I said, okay, because I know that I don't have a very in-depth database profile. And I thought that she was going to use databases. Turns out what she actually did was she dug through my trash. And normally I'm very careful, but this was the Christmas season, and I had thrown out just one credit transaction slip that, of course, had my name, and it had my full credit card number and the expiration date on it. And on camera, she pulled this out and, of course, surprised and shocked me. And then she proceeded to call a local office supplies company, and she talked into the phone saying, "Hello, my name is Beth Givens, and I want to order," and she said, "a shredder." So she ordered a shredder. This was a good lesson for me. So she ordered a shredder using my information and claiming that she was me, and no questions asked. She was able to do it, and that shredder then was delivered to her office. Of course, she paid me back, but it became part of that news story.
Did you destroy your credit card right after this was broadcast?
Well, I kind of chastised myself. I'm pretty careful, and it was so ironic that one time that my trash was searched, she would find it. Actually, I hardly ever use my credit card. I'm one of those people that mostly uses cash.
Do you think credit card companies are pretty good at not charging you for purchases that are really fraud?
Well, actually, it's the law. They can't charge you, and that's the... That's a federal law. The maximum you could be charged is $50, and I haven't heard of a single credit card company that has ever charged a victim of identity theft that amount of money. Mm-hmm. The real cost to you is in your time, and a lot of you have to write a lot of letters. You have to spend a lot of time on long-distance phone calls. And, I mean, most people who are victims of identity theft have to take off several days of work just to deal with it. So those kinds of costs that really hurt you.
Do you think that we're going to need to legally redefine the meaning of privacy?
That's a good question. The definition that we use in our project is the right to control information about you. And that's an old definition of privacy going a long way back. I think what we need to do is start taking that definition of privacy more seriously, especially now that so many of us are spending an awful lot of time on the internet, the notion of control has not been codified very effectively into law in this country. And I like to look at, you know, Germany's notion of privacy. They have a word, and it must be an immensely long word. They call it informational self-determination. And I think that's a great way of looking at privacy. You should be able to determine what is done with personal information about you. And if that has to be done through laws and regulations, fine. What's happening right now is that industry is saying, let us prove ourselves. Let us show that we can do self-regulatory practices and allow people to control their information. And I'm just not seeing those self-regulatory practices going the full length in terms of allowing us to control our information.
Well, Beth Givens, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Beth Givens directs the Privacy Rights Clearinghouse, headquartered in San Diego, and she's the author of the Privacy Rights Handbook, which will be published in September. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.